obviously your pride gets hit when the sperm analysis comes in. And I always thought I wouldn't be that guy. But I think I was that guy a little bit. It fucking humbles you. No matter what happens, it humbles you, and you have to address a lot of things about yourself. No one explained what it was, because I guess 1% morphology isn't 0% morphology.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. And we are delighted to be joined this week by David Finn. David, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Welcome to the hot seat. And so tell us about your journey or quest.
Yeah, our IVF quest. So Lauren and I have been together for 20 years in March, which is a long time. And
do less for murder.
I know. And Lauren got diagnosed with PCOS about 10 years ago. And I think it's because we were living somewhere where we didn't feel, I think, on a kind of a fundamental level, we didn't feel like, oh, now's the right time to have a kid, because I think on a deep level we were a bit unsettled and a bit unhappy where we were living in LA in the States for a long time. And it was a sneaking suspicion that we were like, oh, I don't think this is for us. So I think that's why we put off the kid thing. But then Lauren did get diagnosed with PCOS at some point in the middle of that. And then we moved home in 2020. And very quickly, feeling more settled and feeling a bit happier, we were like, okay, I think we can do this. So we started trying in 2021 for about a year, no dice. We suspected PCOS was at play. So then we went for tests through the NHS, and I had morphology in my sperm test. Everything else was okay. Motility was like just on the lower end. But everything else was okay. Count and volume was all okay. And then, so it was decided that we'd probably, with the combination of PCOS and the bad morphology, that we'd need IVF. So we started on the NHS pathway, and we had a horrid time off the bat. It was kind of like, BMI stuff was quite, that was the headline. Pretty quickly. And I know they have to have parameters, but we found that once we started, parameters would already start changing. And I think that's been happening a lot in the last few years as the NHS kind of has less and less funding for this stuff. Boroughs are getting less rounds, and the parameters within those rounds are changing. And I remember the doctor was like, okay, you try and lose, you know, about, it was like 10% or 15% of your body weight to Lauren in the next few months. And I was just, we were coming out of these sessions in tears each time, and it was just so cold and matter of fact, and immediately it just felt all wrong. So we decided to go private, and we started with IUI, and that didn't work. We did a round of IUI, that didn't work. And then, so start of last year, so February 24 was our first egg retrieval. And Lauren got OHSS, so we had to do a freeze-all. And then we went through unsuccessful rounds with the private clinic, and we had 3 miscarriages of those 4, which was horrendous. The first one was about this time last year. It was in the lead up to Christmas. So the first one was in the lead up to Christmas, and that really took it out of us, because it was the first kind of, you get your first kind of positive pregnancy tests. For it to go away, and Lauren had to have a DNC, and it was especially brutal. So then we carried on into the new year, 2 more miscarriages. And then just before our last transfer with that private clinic, Lauren got a diagnosis of lupus anticoagulant, which you'll never know exactly why a round didn't work. We went to a miscarriage specialist, and he said, this just won't work. Unless you have blood thinners, because you need blood thinners. If you've got lupus anticoagulant, it's a clotting disorder. So for the last round, Lauren was on these blood thinners, and that kind of gave us renewed hope. And then it transpired that it was the wrong dosage. So we were all out then from that private clinic. So we had to regroup, and there was a period of kind of, do we want to do this again? Can we do this again? And once we decided that we did want to do it again, Lauren produced a file of research that she'd already done. And she went, here are the places that I've been looking at. Here is the shortlist. And I didn't really know she'd been doing this. And she showed me this clinic in Athens that her head was turned towards. And we looked at the pricing and it was like way cheaper. And the success rates were slightly better. And the kind of reviews for this particular doctor were, like, we've talked about this before, like, people are evangelical about this guy. He's like this kind of IVF Jesus figure in Greece. And as soon as we had a Zoom meeting with him, it was like, done deal. It was like, this feeling of relief came over us, because for the first time since 2021, right from that first diagnosis on the NHS, the first kind of consultations with the NHS, and then the whole time in that first private clinic in the UK, after this consultation with this guy in Greece, it was like, someone gets us and someone gets it. And he understands, and it felt like he was going to do like a tailored approach to what we'd been going through. And there were just things that we needed to hear. He was like, you have done everything you can. You've been doing all of the right stuff. And there has been hiccups along the way, but I don't think any of that has been you. And we are going to get to the bottom of this. He said, we're going to turn over every stone, and I won't do treatment until I believe that I can make this work for you. And that felt fantastic, because we got the sense from the clinic in the UK, it was like, oh, failed round. Okay, let's just go again. Oh, let's just go again. And it was that. There was no kind of analysis as to why it might not have worked. There was no kind of examination in detail. And that lupus anticoagulant thing, we found that out off our own backs. Like, we pushed for those tests and we did that research. And so, yeah, so we went to Athens, had a lovely time. They were brilliant. The clinic kind of put their money where their mouth was. And it was everything that we'd hoped for. And this time we got 5 healthy embryos, and first transfer didn't work. And we are between transfer 1 and 2 for this clinic, but we have had them, the remaining 4 PGTA tested, and we've ended up with 2 euploids and 1 mosaic, which is low mosaic, so a potential kind of fallback. So we've got 2.5 left, hopefully with the right dosage of treatment for the lupus anticoagulant, and yeah, with the right, hopefully, fingers crossed, with all the right kind of tools going into it.
So wow.
That's where we are now. So in the new year, we go back and we go again.
quite the experience. And thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry to hear about your miscarriages and the cock-ups with not the correct dosage for things that you found out and presented to the clinic. It's just very frustrating, isn't it? And there's many commonalities between both my and Kieran's stories and what you're going through. So we resonate. We hear you. And yeah, lots to unpack there, I think. And I think, just to pick up something right at the end before I actually go to where I want to go, but what you mentioned about that, the doctor, that language that you use, like making you feel seen and understood and talked to a human being, not like a patient number or a checkbook, that if there was like one thing that people could take away, like professionals, is that just don't lose sight of what you're doing and who you're doing it for, because it, like you mentioned, the UK, it feels like that. And that's what we speak to a lot of guys. That's what a lot of people feel like as well. Room for improvement, I think.
I think it's such a subtle adjustment as well.
Yeah.
And I think we've spoken about this before. It's such a small thing to just tweak. And I think it doesn't take much energy to just be a bit softer and a bit more empathetic. And also with that clinic, I will say it's like, they're always accessible on WhatsApp. And we have his personal email. And in the clinic in the UK that we went to, you'd go in and you didn't know what nurse you'd get that day. You didn't know what doctor you'd be doing your consultation with. You'd be going to the clinic that morning for your transfer and you don't know what doctor it's going to be. Yeah, just knowing you have the consistency of a team that you trust going through the process with this other clinic was everything as well.
That's quality. Yeah, because it is, for us going through it, it's life-changing moments. Each time, each appointment, it's not about the end result, which we all like desperately want, but it's every appointment is a life-changing, life-defining moment, and often forks in the road defining which way we're going to go next. And like you said, you know, the investigations that he said he would put you under, that could have yielded results that meant you had to go one way or another. And let's that continuity of knowing who you're speaking to and having that relationship, important for people to remember that and not lose sight of what they're doing. There's something that you mentioned right at the outset there that actually I don't think we've really unpicked in any episodes previously. So I do want to come back to that, and because it's something that struck a chord with me, is that feeling you said of not really, when you were in LA, casual, by the way, just chucking that in there. Oh yeah, we lived in LA.
But when I was in Hollywood.
Just going to down Sunset Boulevard for a stroll or whatever else.
There was, from off the last place we lived, from our front door, if you could put one toe in the doorway and lean around this corner, you could see the Hollywood signs. Technically, we had a view of the Hollywood sign.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, I know it's very different going somewhere on holiday, but I absolutely loved it out there. But in a very small snapshot, I imagine it is very different living and working and everything else. But you mentioned something about not feeling truly comfortable and ready, and that feeling of being settled to try and start a family. And actually, that's, as I said, it brought up something for me. I remember, because my wife and I were together for 8 years before we started trying, and married four of those. And before we even started trying, all those questions that people, like, oh, because I think you're going to follow society's narrative of house, marriage, kids. When people were saying, when are you two going to have kids? That was annoying us before we even knew we had fertility issues. But for us, there's two things. Firstly, because we were enjoying being a young couple and just having freedom and doing whatever. But also, we always had that feeling like you're laying foundations, I think. And when that finally feels right, when that moment feels right, it's okay, shall we start now? So what was it for you two that didn't quite feel like that moment was there?
I think it was being somewhere that didn't feel, I just think on this deeper level, I was very anxious living there, and I think Lauren was as well. And I think that was just the precarious nature of my job. It's bad enough being in the UK and being an actor and a writer and all that stuff, because you're at the mercy of other gatekeepers and decision makers to give you permission to do work. But out there, it was like, out there, it's you audition for something and you sign a contract for 7 years, and then they can make you wait 6 months while they decide if they're going to make the show or not. So even when you're working, you're in this kind of, it feels like this axe is hanging over you. And I just felt like the precarious nature of that, and also us being really far away from friends and family. Like, we've got some really good friends from our time there, but we never felt like we had a kind of a village or a tribe or like a settled kind of network, because it's such a transient place as well. And it just didn't feel like our place. And it just, we didn't really figure that out for a long time, because it's shiny and it's sunny and you can get in the car and go to Vegas for the weekend and you can do all this fun stuff, which to the outside world and on Instagram, people are like, what are you talking about? You've got a brilliant life. But it took being unhappy in a place like that to really have a kind of realization of, well, none of this matters. It's always people. It's always the people. It's that is that on a fundamental level, it's your friends and your family and your the people that make you feel like, oh, I'm at home here. Yeah. And it never quite felt like that out there. You go and buy a coffee and the guy that's giving you coffee is, hey, are you an actor? Yeah. Oh, I'm an actor. And do you take my card and read my script? And then your Uber driver's pitching you scripts. And it's like everyone's just an out of work something out there. And it's just the whole town just vibrates on this kind of anxious level. And it works for some people. Some people thrive on that. But like for a jobbing actor, I lost my marbles a little bit.
Yeah. And I think fast forward to what you didn't know at the time, then struggling to conceive, I think probably in hindsight, forgive me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but I'd imagine then being at home felt like a very good decision to then navigate that and having that safety and security of friends and family nearby.
Yeah, and we moved to quite near Lauren's family, and both her sisters now have kids, so there's lots of nieces and nephews, and so the whole family thing is really amplified by that. And we spend time with our nieces and nephews, and the joy it brings, and that very quickly fast tracked us to, okay, we're ready, let's go. But then by that point, I was turning 38 that year, so already we're a little bit on the clock. Lauren's younger than me by 3 years, but again, it's that thing of in the NHS pathway, they will use the term geriatric pregnancy for anyone that's over 35, which I think needs examining. But it's immediately we were like, okay, we've got to go quick. So when we realized it wasn't working, we addressed it quite quickly, I think.
Thanks for being so open, buddy. No, it's tough. It really is tough. We know that. But being open and just having these conversations, because people will assume that life's perfect for you. You're an actor. You know, you've lived in LA and everything. But actually, if you feel touched by infertility or fertility struggles, it affects everyone. And as Sean mentioned earlier, it's that similarities between everyone's stories and what they feel. Especially as men, I think generally men do follow a certain pathway of feelings and processing of everything. I just want to take you back to when you said, like, Lauren, you knew she had a PCOS. So when you went to because we had the same situation with Jen, like, we knew that was going to be the issue. So when we started trying, we assumed we might need a little bit of additional help. First of all, did you ever think that? Did you ever think, if we know this, we might need some additional help? And did you go into giving your first semen analysis with any kind of idea that you might be pulled into the equation and it might be something on your side? Because I think a lot of guys don't. We automatically think we've got this evidence that it's this. And then when it does come around that we have our own slight issue, it can really rock you. It rocked me massively because I wasn't expecting it. But yeah. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so we did, yeah. So Lauren went for an examination because on our health insurance out in the States, which is another thing which is super stressful about living here, by the way, everyone has to have this private health insurance. But we were quite lucky because through the Actors Union, you get quite good health insurance. So she would get appointments with a kind of OBGYN once a year, just with MOT and a pap smear and all that stuff. And then that's how she found out through that. And it was, this may impact you trying to conceive. So we knew it was going to be a possibility, which I think is why one of the reasons when we got back and we decided to go for it, we were quite on it in terms of, okay, it's not working after 8-10 months. I think it was maybe a year. So we addressed it quite quickly because we suspected that was going to be the reason. And to the sperm analysis, I mean, the abuse I put my body through in my 20s, I'm not surprised, but I don't think anyone goes into it going, I think there's something up here. It's perhaps the kind of arrogance of being a straight white bloke and the kind of the entitlement that comes with that. You go, yeah, I'll be fine. And then that first result came back. It was like, okay, we're going to do another test. And I was like, why? And they were like, oh, there are some parameters that aren't optimal. And I was like, okay, so did another test. And even after that second test, no one really explained it to me. Like, no one ever really said, this is what the problem is, and this is why it's going to impact your kind of trying to fall pregnant. So it took a long time. And even when we went to the private clinic, no one explained again what it was. They were just like, yeah, we can work with this. Because I guess 1% morphology isn't 0% morphology. And after they clean the sperm and everything, they were like, we've got, there's not many, but we've got a couple here that we can use. And then it just took more research from our end, having to figure out what it was and what it meant. And yeah, going into those first tests, no idea. And there was a kind of like, oh shit. And just the kind of your ego gets hit and your kind of pride. And again, it's that, I guess for me, entitlement of being a bloke that is also something that I've had to examine and assess during this process, because it fucking humbles you no matter what. No matter what happens, it humbles you, and you have to address a lot of things about yourself. But it was a shock, but not a surprise.
But let's stick with that humbling. Can you expand on that?
I've had moments in my life where I've had to go, like the whole thing in LA, when I had a bit of a mental health kind of wobble, I think maybe wobble is kind of underserving what it was. I had depression and all that stuff in LA. And there was a period of time where I was like trying to figure out, I was like, what is going on? And it took me really examining my reasoning for still being there. And it was my pride. It was my pride and my ego kind of going, well, I want people to think that I've made a success of being here and I'm not leaving until that. And then in 2020, when everyone had a bit of a wobble, mine was a kind of around that. And I was like, I remember watching the news out there one day and Trump was on the TV talking about Obama and Biden committing treason and the numbers were going up and he was talking about bleach. And I was like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? And literally that day we made the decision and I was like, I've been holding on to this for so long because I want people to think that I've made a success of it. And the reason I mention that is because I've had a few moments in my life like that where I've realized that pride and ego are the things that need addressing. And in this whole IVF thing, once we started going through it, obviously your pride gets hit when the sperm analysis comes in. And I always thought I wouldn't be that guy that would be like, yeah, my sperm's fine. I didn't think I'd be that guy, but I think I was that guy a little bit. And I had one friend who's been through it, who was very open about it. I've got a few friends who I've discovered recently who have been through it and just didn't talk about it or whatever, which is your prerogative. But I had one friend who I've talked about quite a lot, and he was just this open book. And he was just like, yeah, I've basically got no sperm, or my sperm count is so low that I would never get a girl pregnant. And he was just so candid about it. And yes, would make jokes about it, but like, it was also a really supportive, if you ever need to talk about it, call me up. It's a fucking nightmare. So let me chat to you if there's any questions you ever have. And him being like that from the onset just made me go, he's checked his ego at the door. That's what I need to do, because otherwise I'm just going to have months of like turmoil of being this proud asshole that I need to dismantle that and just do that. And also that will allow me to show up better for Lauren in this process, because it's her that's going through it in terms of the treatment and the hormones, and it's her that's putting her body through it. Yes, we're both in the journey together, of course, but she's the one that's going through it physically. So if me following his example allows me to be better for her, then that's the way, that's the path. And I've said that to him recently. He had a lot to do with that. And it was very subtle. It was only a couple of conversations, but it was like, that's it. That's it.
This series is all about reminding you that when it comes to fertility, you're not on your own. At the Male Fertility Podcast, we know how powerful the right support can be, which is why we've partnered with Fertility Family to share input. We all know that nutrition matters when it comes to fertility, but let's be honest, maintaining a perfectly balanced diet for conception is incredibly hard. Choosing a supplement can be just as confusing, especially when many multivitamins contain strong antioxidants that can actually harm sperm quality. Impril is different. It's made from activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously been struggling to conceive. Impril is different. It's made using activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously struggled to conceive. What we like is that behind the science at Fertility Family are real stories from real people. To find out more, visit www.fertilityfamily.co.uk. And if you decide it's right for you, our listeners get 10% off using the code MFPOD10. That's MFPOD10. Now, back to the episode.
He shortcutted it for you, because if you didn't have that, then it would have been navigating that on your own, which Kieran and I both had to do, because I didn't have any friends who had been through it to talk to. There was no one talking about it openly online or anything. And it's a slow process. And I just loved that kind of moment of realization, just going, what was your word was like, he's checked his ego at the door. I fucking love that. It's because if you've got someone, and then I think that's, there's so many perfect things about that, like what you said, in that there's a bit of humor there. Great. And that's what we do as blokes. But also then you acknowledge that for you to deal with that, and if you were hitting this shield of ego, identity, and not really getting to the crux of it to deal with it, then no work would have been done. And ultimately you realize that that wouldn't have been serving Lauren very well. And again, okay, there's some potential like nuances there about, of course, you are still a person, you still need and deserve to be listened to and heard. But sometimes, again, there's nothing wrong with this. As men, we just want to go, do you know what? I need to be strong for my missus right here. And there's nothing wrong with that, as long as it's not being buried forever, because then it'll be a shallow grave and it will come back up. Thank you for sharing that, because I love it. It's all about leaving breadcrumbs for others. That your mate did it for you, you're now doing that for others by sharing that.
Because he didn't have anyone. So since I've been chatting to you guys, and since I joined the network, sounds like the mafia, doesn't it? Since I joined the WhatsApp group and listened to the podcast, and I sent that to him, and he was like, do you think I could join? I was like, yeah. And I just added him on the WhatsApp, and he hasn't chipped in much, but he just said he loves it, and he just wished he discovered it sooner. Because again, it's, and I think that's what I respond to as a man more than anything, is someone who just shows you the way without explaining it to you, just leading by example. I think I've always responded to that more than anything. And we never had a conversation where he was like, yeah, you need to do this. He just was. And he just, that behavior, just, I just saw how much more, how at peace he was with it.
Yeah. But on that note, so, about like, you need to do this or that, we never say that, because we acknowledge that what worked for me might not work for Kira, and what worked for him might not work for me, and then and so on. We all will have certain like little anecdotal things that work for us. And for anyone else listening, it's about taking what works for you, having it as a tool in your toolbox, and then discarding the rest. Take the meat off the bones and go, do you know what, I can't resonate with X, Y, Z. And then you form your own strategy, because the beauty of life is that we're all very individual. That's why there is no one way to do anything. Right? It's our own individual quirks and traits, beliefs, upbringings, you know, everything goes into who we are. And yeah, so brilliant. And I think it's going to, I will ask this as a general question, because he's not here, but maybe we should try and get him on, mate. He, as he said to you, he didn't have that when he needed it. So do you know like how he got to that point where he was so accepting of it? Was it, did it take him a long time or anything like that?
I think his partner was very, she's done a lot of work with therapy and stuff. And I think she just gave him a nudge in that direction. Maybe it was just out of desperation. I haven't really talked to him about what it was that made you have that shift. Yeah, because he's quite grew up quite laddie and played a lot of football and all that stuff. But he, I think she's so brilliant as well, his partner. I think just kind of her softness and I guess her kind of emotional intelligence has opened him up in terms of that stuff. Same with me with Lauren. It's like you kind of, when you're playing with the big dogs, you gotta, you know, when you're with someone who's that switched on, you have to wake up to it a little bit. And I think that might be true of him as well. But perhaps I'm speculating. I'd need to ask him.
Yeah, fully appreciate that. Of course, I just didn't know if it was a conversation you'd actually had. But there is an importance in that notion that he, like us, he didn't have that, but you can still get through it. It's just a lot quicker and easier if you have that community. And like you mentioned, he's now in the WhatsApp, and it's not at all about how active or not you are. It's getting from it what you need. And for him, it's clearly hearing other guys talk about what, probably validating a lot for him right now, retrospectively.
Yeah. And I think it's sad that some guys go through it and they just have to go the hard road themselves the whole way, which is why I think the accessibility of you guys is so brilliant. And that's what I've learned from you guys and from my friend that we've just talked about, is being accessible and knowing that just being open can be a thing that makes a bit of a difference. Like Lauren and I know this other couple that are going through IVF at the moment, and they're a few years behind us. They're just starting out. And they ask us questions all the time. And it's, yes, here are the shortcuts. This is what you don't want to put up with. These are the questions that you can ask and advocate for yourself. And don't just take it as rote that this is what you need to do. Ask the questions. And just being an open book and being accessible, I think it will help people exponentially in a way that you don't realize.
Yeah, 100% agree there. You've nailed it in one sentence of why we started everything. It was because we struggled on our own so much, and it just wasn't necessary, but we shouldn't have been in that position. And, you know, you don't have to read far to find out that men are pack animals, humans are pack animals. We need to belong to something. I think when you get diagnosed with fertility challenges or infertile, however you want to put it, you suddenly don't have somewhere to belong. And that's a big thing for a guy. You can still go to the pub, you can still go and play football, but you feel like part of you doesn't belong somewhere. And you nailed it there, man. It's just about giving voice to others. And as you've just explained, like helping your friends now, you can just give them those little shortcuts. And that's all it is. It's a little bit at a time, and it builds to a community that is there for everybody. I do have a question in terms of so we've talked briefly about relationships and things, but how has this affected your relationship with the missus? Has there been any significant change, or are there any difficult points? Yeah, it'd be interesting to discuss that.
One of the things I'm proudest of with me and Lauren is how I think this has brought us closer. There are times where, again, I have to check myself because sometimes if a round doesn't work and then we come home and then sometimes I'm like, okay, life is still here and we have to crack on. And sometimes I can do better with that stuff. But I think overall it's made us closer because it's something that you never expect to go through. And going through it, like the miscarriages especially, over and over again, if you can navigate that kind of trauma together and still be able to talk about it and be open with each other and be close. We started a fucking podcast as well. So that in moments has brought us a lot of joy because it's forced us to find some humor in a really dark place. And a therapist that I worked with a few years ago, she said, actually I was quite low at this point. And she said, if you can find one bit of whimsy every day, something that's just silly and childish that just makes you chuckle to yourself, just do that. And I think we have been able to do that with this, not just with us making a podcast, but also we use humor with each other as a way of connecting. So there's been some astonishing moments where we've been in a really dark place and Lauren will lean over to me and go, and say a brilliant joke, and you cry with laughter, and it's also me realize how resilient we are as a couple. I didn't quite realize because we've never been tested to this extent on this level as this. And but there are areas where I could improve, and Lauren might say the same as well, but there are, you know, there's still
short. None of us are ever the finished article, are we? And I think that's the beauty of it, is that we keep aiming to improve ourselves, and then as a result, a byproduct, our relationships as well, with of course our significant other, but in other areas of our life too. And you mentioned not knowing how resilient you were until it was tested and it was forced to come to the fore. But I think that is obvious in the fact that you're both open and sharing now, like during your treatment with no known outcome. That is just, for me, like the personification of strength, because I couldn't have done it. So I fully take my hats off to you. You have my utmost respect for doing that, because you're living in the now, you're sharing in the now. You're not talking about it retrospectively in hindsight like we do. So yeah, mate, like, fair play.
Yeah, we might have made a rod for our own backs with some aspects of the sharing of it and the podcast, and because we record in real time. But inevitably, you guys will know, you have to like sometimes bank episodes to then release them in a kind of staggered way or a structured way. And so there's been times where, you know, we'll record an episode and we'll go, yeah, we're pregnant. Hey. And then we'd have a miscarriage or whatever, like three or four weeks later, or sometimes 10 weeks later. And then we're like, oh shit, we still have to put those episodes out because we have to put our money where our mouth is. Like we said, this is what we're going to do. And then, so we get family members or friends text us or go, yeah, it worked. And then you go, oh shit, we didn't think of this. Yeah. But yeah, it didn't work. And then you have to kind of tell people the bad news off the podcast as well. But that's something that we didn't, that's just something we didn't anticipate. We didn't consider. We, this last round that didn't work, we were like, I don't know if I can do another it didn't work episode. And then we checked ourselves and we were like, no, this is what we said we were going to do. And we have people that now are along for the ride with us. So we got to do it. And then we did it. And we immediately felt just 5-10% lighter.
Yeah, I think there's an emphasis of how raw the journey is because of the way you're doing it. Like it is exactly how it is. You could make it all perfect, cut things out, do different things, but that, from what you're saying and what how you want to interpret it, that wouldn't be true to what you're doing. And though it's so difficult, it will be helping so many people because actually they'll see it being played out. The important thing is obviously to look after, and I've said this to you before, David, like look after yourselves. There's an okay point just to say, I need to step away for a bit because it's hard being in I want to call it a limelight because limelight is something really positive, but you're putting yourself out there in a circumstance on a subject that is so delicate. Me and Sean have done it before where we've gone, yeah, we can't do that right now because it's a bit tough. So I really appreciate what you're doing and how you're doing it, but make sure you're looking after yourself and Lauren, buddy, because it's so tough. And we've had those conversations, haven't we, mate?
It feels a little bit like couples therapy. Whenever we do a record, it does feel a little bit like couples therapy. And we're still making mistakes on the journey. There was, I don't know if I told you guys, there was one day where we were doing Alubion injections and you twist the needle and it loads up the dosage. And we didn't realize it was empty. And we twisted it and it was like, click, did the injection. And then the next day we were like, the numbers didn't add up. We were like, oh shit. So then that episode of the podcast, we were basically arguing about whose fault it was. So we're still making mistakes and there's still loads of shit that we don't know. And I think maybe that is something that might help people is that you guys are, like you said, you're doing it retrospectively and that helps so many people because you have access to so much information. But we're still grabbing for the information. So we're kind of like, we're still just, like Lauren says, we're two potatoes with a microphone.
That's great.
Still making boo-boos along the way.
And two hot potatoes.
Hot potatoes, yeah. In terms of making mistakes, I'm just going to go back slightly to when you said about there were times when, say, you're going through treatment and you just, as a man, you react differently. And I think it's okay. Guys need to hear that. Like, you're not always going to fully understand where your wife is. If you are, please let us know because the rest of us are searching for that. But it's okay if you get it wrong. You just learn from it, don't you? There was several discussions that me and Jen would have, and I would come in at a completely different angle to where she was. But actually, over time, that's what brought us together. It made me a better husband. The important thing is to learn from it. You make a mistake, right? What went wrong? Learn from it. Yeah, I just wanted to highlight it because I expect loads of guys out there are going, yeah, especially something like a miscarriage. I remember getting it distinctly wrong after a miscarriage once in terms of I went in with a kind of similar thing to you where you said, David, okay, it hasn't worked. Let's move on. Jen wasn't there. She was processing. Like she'd had a baby in her tummy and she was carrying it. She was pregnant and we had unpicking to do on her side. But you learn if it happens again. But yeah, I just wanted to mention it because I'm sure guys are listening in thinking, yeah, I sometimes struggle where to gauge emotionally with my wife, especially after a tough cycle or a tough bit of news.
Yeah, and I think that there is an element of we do feel the pressure sometimes as men to hold it together and be emotionally resilient for your partner, especially something as emotionally draining, but also something so physically devastating to their body. And I think I think I mentioned this to you, Sean. Last year at Christmas was an example of what not to do, because that miscarriage that we had leading up to Christmas, I felt like maybe I had it together and I was like being strong for Lauren. And then on Christmas Day, I just felt shit. Like emotionally, I started like getting on the old fashions too early. And I had to go to bed at 9 o'clock because I was just being a drunk asshole. And I was like, oh, this is what happens sometimes if I've been holding it together and I've been being the strong one. I didn't realize actually where I was, because I wanted to support Lauren, or I was trying to hold it together for Lauren. So you're completely right. I think it's sometimes doing the kind of preemptive things. Don't be reactive, be proactive.
Yeah.
And it's like we talk about exercise, and if you're into meditation or just a walk or whatever, it's maybe trying to stay ahead of the demons as opposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important because, I mean, we are all just human beings. And if we're trying to suppress those emotions and those thoughts and feelings, it will come out in the most inconvenient of times. It will find its way out. And it's okay to want to be strong for your partner or whatever, you know, in whatever scenario we're talking. If there's anyone listening that's not necessarily dealing with fertility stuff right now, there'll be other stuff in life, and that's fine as long as you have your outlet somewhere, because otherwise it will find its way to the surface, and then you're no good to anyone. If you're burnt out or upset or depressed, whatever it is, just find ways of regulating.
Yeah, it always finds its way out at some point. You can cover it. There's only a certain amount of time you can cover it before, and it will come at a really bizarre point. You won't expect it.
Christmas Day.
Day. Yeah, just, and yeah. I think you say about laying the foundations in terms of preempting things. Some of that comes from mistakes. A lot of the things that I did in my final rounds and cycles, I implemented because I'd fucked up before, you know, and I'd made note of it. Like, that wasn't good for me. For the first two rounds, I stopped being physically active, really. I went to the gym a little bit, but because of my mental state, I'd got to the point where I couldn't motivate myself to do it. But actually, it's the key point of keeping my mental health good then and now. And it's something that I implement now to stop anything else from happening. But I had to go through it to fully understand it. Yeah, so it's just important to, well, we've mentioned it before on the podcast in terms of using a diary or journal, just write down when you feel good, when you don't feel good. And it's keeping notes, and gradually you piece everything together, don't you? Mm. What works for me and what truly doesn't. But it comes with time. Be kind to yourself. It's all right to get it wrong. No one wishes for this, and it doesn't come with a set of instructions. You just got to figure it out. I'd like to talk a little bit more about like your transition from the NHS to maybe to Greece, because I think it's a subject that's come out quite a lot. You mentioned that Lauren turned up with all these basically portfolio of things that she'd been researching, which, to be fair, sounds exactly like the type of thing my wife would have done. You think, oh, we're just trotting along at the moment. No, I've got this whole portfolio to go through. What type of things were you looking for as a guy when she gave you this portfolio, wherever it was, all these ideas? What was the first thing that went through your head? Because we've had quite a few discussions in the community, but also on webinars and things like that, about people wanting to think about going abroad. What was your first thought, Sunil?
My first thought was, we certainly don't want to use the same clinic. We had to make a change. And there was a kind of, I feel like, I don't know if this is true so much anymore, but even when we started three, 4 years ago now, when people go, oh, we went to Prague or wherever, or Athens or wherever to, it's a little bit like when someone says, yeah, I went to Turkey to get my hair done. I felt like there used to be maybe this kind of, oh, they're just going because it's cheaper or whatever. But when we actually looked into it and did a bit of a deeper dive, I just feel like they're more likely to tailor it. It's more likely to be a bit more kind of bespoke to your needs. And there are benefits of cost as well. Like, it is cheaper. Like, in terms of the PGTA testing we just did, it would have cost us twice that in the UK. At even a kind of mid-level clinic, it would cost twice that. And the numbers were good, the reviews were good, but I think it's mainly because we needed a change. And I think the fact that Lauren had already done that research was also kind of proactive way of staying ahead of it, of protecting herself, perhaps, in terms of the pattern is that this clinic isn't working. So far, we've had three failed rounds, two miscarriages. We've got one left. What's to say this one's going to work? It's our lowest quality embryo, et cetera, et cetera. So I think Lauren had already put things in place for her mental health to go, if this doesn't work, then this is something that kind of, obviously we will process, but this is something that we can move towards. It gives us something that we can do. Yeah. And it was quite the gap from that to the consultation, that Zoom, that lovely Zoom chat we had with the doctor out there was quite a quick turnaround. It was only a couple of weeks. And as soon as we talked to him, it was, I just think in your gut sometimes with things like that, and I get that with my job quite a lot, you get a gut feeling about particular jobs and particular people because you have to rely a little bit, because it's so relationship based, you have to rely a little bit on your kind of gut instinct. And we just both were in tears immediately, and the relief of them actually doing the business when we were there was great.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think it's a very common story as well, that women are that kind of into all the research. And we had Tracy Sainsbury, a fertility counsellor, on the podcast a few series back. She said, yeah, women are often, they're already on step like S, R, whatever, way down the alphabet. Men are still on A, looking at B, but and it's all good.
Like, oh, I can't believe I've got dodgy sperm. Men are still reeling.
Yeah.
What's morphology? You know, you mentioned something there that I think explains it perfectly. I think you said about that, the concept of going to Turkey to get your teeth done. And is that the same thing in terms of going abroad for your IVF or stuff? I think the strong amount, there is, the world's obviously opening up to it now, but it's ignorance. People think that, well, British medicine is the best in the world, and if you go outside Britain, you're not going to get as good service. The more conversations we have, the more we realise that actually there's some fantastic clinics out there across Europe and the world, like across the world. And people need to be open to that, need to be open to the fact of what they might get somewhere else might actually fit them better. You know, it won't fit everybody. Some people will want to stay here because ties, financially, whatever. But it's, don't close that door. Look at it. Because I think knowing what I know now, it's definitely something I would have looked into in terms of what my options further afield. But there seems to be a certain level of, oh, we can't, you don't want to do that because of that. No, it's not true. Look into it. Do your research like Lauren did, and embrace it, because it might be the right thing for you. And if you're going to go through fertility treatment and it's going to be tough, there's a clinic in the sun where you can go and have some sun and have a bit of time out where you only have to briefly look at research and should see that being in the sun and the vitamin D makes you feel better, even for a little bit of time. It's almost an element of coping, isn't it? A strategy, stress release, be out, be in the sun, be somewhere different away from home. There's loads of options. That's what I'm saying. I think people...
Yeah, and also being away as well, it gives you the opportunity to really focus on each other. As opposed to if we were here, I know us, and it'd be like, oh, this needs doing, that needs doing in the house, this needs doing. Well, I suppose I got to send these emails. But when we were out there, it wasn't a holiday by any stretch, but if we're near a beach and it's sunny, yeah, we're going to go to the beach. There's no point in like going, oh no, we're just here to do a job. You still get all the benefits of being in a brilliant European city, or that you can make something positive out of it that you wouldn't get if you were just driving to a clinic up the road or whatever. And it just allows you to just be together. And if you are doing it as a couple, it just allows you to focus on each other, and you end up talking it through more. You're going for coffee and a croissant in a nice little cafe and you chat. Yeah, I think we really liked that aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely understand why. The way you just explained it, like it's a, like I said, it's a perfect environment to be together, go through something that is challenging. It really is. Mm. Look, Belly, I'm conscious of time. Fantastic conversation. Like, I think we could sit here and talk to you all day, but you're a busy guy. We're going to finish up, but I've just got one more question for you. If you could give one bit of advice to your younger self, what would it be?
In terms of fertility stuff?
Yeah, otherwise that's a really long question.
You don't want to open the door to the other one.
Yeah, don't drink 6 pints and then go and do it.
There are demons behind that door.
In terms of fertility, what bit of advice would you give your younger self?
For me particularly, I think I touched on it earlier, check your ego at the door, because ultimately that shit doesn't matter. That's old, kind of archaic, the pride in your virility and all that stuff. Just check your ego at the door, and as much as you can, be an open book and be accessible.
Love that.
Yeah, man, it's been amazing having you on. We've really appreciated it. We appreciate everything that you're doing. As we've said in this pod, like, you are going through it, but you're being a voice for so many men and couples that are going through this, you and Lauren. So thank you. We appreciate you, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Legend, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favor and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to talk about in the mailbag, please drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message that comes through. And if you'd like a bit more guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by men who get it. For the latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. Remember, you're not alone.